He renders to service. He fills the slot. Steps off the page. And that's it. It's all done. One of the great features about the man, or the interesting features, is he was an old man. He was in his 80s. You know, it's great to know that opportunities don't only come to young people. In the world, if they make you redundant when you're 50, they think that's it. A man of 50 has no future. But in the things of God, here's a man of 80. And when he was 80, the biggest thing he ever did in his life was done then. But can I say to older brethren in the meetings, you know, we hear a lot about young people and the great advantage of young people, and all of that is true, and the potential of young people and the value of young people, and certainly that is all very, very much appreciated. But can I speak just a gentle word of encouragement to older brethren? There are men here tonight, and if they're not in their 80s, they're within a whisker of it. And you may feel that, well, there's not much I can do now. Like, I'm dawdling into the meetings and I can just about make it to my seat. And half the time, I need a walking stick to get me to the seat. And I need a hearing aid when I'm in the seat. And I'm propped up by all these digital accessories to keep me going. And they're hardly worth being here. Can I say, the integrity of your testimony, the maturity of your years, your very presence in the meeting adds weight and gravitas to the whole business. And you, dear older brethren, don't think for a moment that you're past it, and that God has nothing more for you to do, and that the saints have no more use for you. This man did his great work when he was in his 80s. He was a very wealthy man. Exceedingly wealthy. In fact, he's the only man in the Bible who is called a very great man. There are one or two men called a great man, but he's called a very great. And very great in the sense that he was a massive farmer. He lived on the east of Jordan. Most of you know that the Jordan Valley cuts the land in two. And on this side, Jerusalem, and those places that we know so well, the western side of the river. And then across in the east, the land rises greatly. And there's a very long table land on the east side of Jordan that is divided by deep ravines here and there. This man lived on that upper table land in a place called Rogaline, not too far from the brook Jabbok. To which Jacob came in those interesting passages in the book of Genesis. And it was a very fertile countryside. In fact, that's the country, you remember when they were coming across into the land, the Reubenites and Gadites and Manassites, they saw the country was so fertile and the grass was so good and lush that they said to Moses, we'll just take it here. Well, that's where this man lived and had become a very, very wealthy farmer. And there came a day in this wealthy farmer's life when the Lord gave him an opportunity to use his wealth that he never dreamt would come. Strange, strange the way opportunities can arise. And out of very negative circumstances, because they were negative circumstances that I'll mention just in a minute, we've already mentioned them in the meetings, out of negative circumstances, this man could see an opportunity to do something that is very positive and was highly commendable. Barzillai, the Gileadite. He met David at this place called Mahanaim. That's across the Jordan. You know, we've read those very sad words that David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan by the morning light. There lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. David slipped across the Jordan in the darkness of the night. The great king of Israel said, I have to get out of the land. It's no longer my home. You talk about a moonlight. And when David crossed over with his men, by the time that morning came, David didn't have a man that loved him on the other side. Completely out. And completely over. And feeling very much a rejected, dejected, lonely man. And what added insult to injury was this. The man that orchestrated his eviction was his own son, Absalom. A sad day for David. He made the headquarters of his camp a place called Mahanaim. I wonder why he selected that place. I have a sneaky little suspicion in my mind. I couldn't prove this, but it's a suspicion I have in my mind because that place was named by Jacob. And when Jacob was coming back from the land of Paddan Aram, and he was just coming back into the land, the Bible tells us that he was afraid to meet his brother Esau and all the things, the family problems and so on. And the scriptures tell us that two bands of angels met him. And Jacob was greatly comforted that the God of heaven would meet him with bands of angels. He felt that his brother Esau would soon meet him with a great army that would far outnumber his. But God comforted his heart by saying this, Jacob, don't you worry about how many men Esau has in his battalions. He says, behind you are battalions of angels. And that comforted Jacob's heart. And he called the name of the place Mahanaim, which means two camps. Jacob says, that's the place where the camp of Jacob was met by the camp of God. And the hosts of Jacob and the band of Jacob was met by the band of God. And it was a great place of visitation and comfort and strength for Jacob. I'm wondering, and I've often wondered in my mind, on this dark day in David's life, feeling so desolate, he said, I'll make my camp there. And maybe God will give me two band of angels. Maybe God will give me a little bit of comfort, angelic comfort, the same as he gave to the patriarch, my forefather. The angels never came. But I tell you who did come. There were three men came. It wasn't a band of heavenly beings. But it was a most unusual band of human beings. And when those men stepped into David's life at Mahanaim, they brought David, I tell you, very, very special comfort. Dear Christians, always remember this, and I want to encourage us tonight, if I can. You may never be a preacher. You might never be an overseer. You might never be a missionary. You might never be any of those things that people consider great. But I would like to encourage every Christian here, by the help of God, may each one of us be a Barzillai to someone. You'll not need to live to 80 years to find some Christian out and down and slandered and ostracized. If you can meet them there and then, when other people are distancing themselves, if you can meet them at the point of depression and need, you could be a Barzillai to them in the burdens of life. In fact, the two men that came with Barzillai were strange men, because we are told about them that one of them was an Ammonite, Shobai the Ammonite. Boys, I find that very strange. In fact, you remember the old rascal of a boy, the old Ammonite boy that David one time sent some things to, and the old boy in a bad temper, he cut off the skirts of David, the garments of David's men, and disgraced them. A real old rascal he was. This was his brother. This was his brother. That boy that cut off the skirts of the garments, David had to send an army to deal with him. That's about 10 years before that. And now, the very man who once hated David, in David's hour of friendlessness and need, his brother steps out of the shadows. Shubai, the Ammonite. And then, the other man that was there was Machir, the son of Amiel. You see, I think I heard of that by before or somewhere. You know, it's maybe not so strange that he's there, because he's the man that looked after Mephibosheth. And he knew that this man that's now in trouble, there was a time when things were going well, and he was very kind to a cripple. Very kind to a cripple. And he says, I was thankful that he was so kind to the cripple Mephibosheth. And he says, now it's my opportunity to return the favor. It's good to return favors. Some people are always takers, and they're taking all the benefits they can get. It's good to know that we may take sometimes, but then God allows us to be in a position where we're able to give to others at another time. And then the third, in this triumvirate of mercy, Shubai the Ammonite, and Machir the son of Amiel in Lodebar, and the third man was Barzillai the Gileadite. And the three of them, quite different. Different backgrounds and different characters and even different nationalities. Here we're again at a thing that I mentioned a number of times in these meetings. Amongst this group of three, we have a Gentile, this Ammonite man. And here we have Gentiles shining in a very day when the men of Israel that turned traitor were showing themselves to be less than honorable men. I want to think just for a little minute here about what they brought. You know, you didn't read it, but I'll read it again. It says they brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese for David and for the people that were with him. Wasn't that quite a hamper of gifts? Was not a very thoughtful provision? They just brought these men exactly what they needed. You know, brought them beds. I don't know, I couldn't tell you just how many there were. I would say maybe 2,000 or 3,000, maybe more. You say that puts it in a different light. You say, I thought there was David and half a dozen men with him. No, you're talking about probably a few thousand. Nothing compared to the thousands upon thousands that had followed Absalom. But at least a couple of thousand. You say they brought beds. And they brought food. And a whole variety of food. Beans and pulse and corn and wheat and all kinds of things. And they brought basins. Aye, well, you know, that would be all right. And they brought honey. They brought something to soften. I tell you, these boys would have been glad of a bed to lie on. Other than the bed, it was lying on the hard ground of Gilead. I dare say that David felt he would never sleep out again. He likely thought his days of sleeping out were over when he was hunted as a boy by Saul. When he got to the palace, he thought, I've made it. But things turned unexpectedly turtle in his family. And the man who thought things are nicely settled now, he's out sleeping nothing between his skin and the stars but the clothes that he wears. And I can tell you, a bed, something to soften. And the food, something to satisfy. And the basins. Well, you know, a bit of a wash wouldn't do a fellow any harm. And honey and milk, something to sweeten these great men. And it must have been quite a large gift to satisfy the needs of all those people. And they just brought the very things that were needed just at the right time. You know, Christians, let me say this, and I don't want to be misunderstood here. I'm not going to spiritualize the things just so much at the minute. I might do that shortly. But you know, there are times when the most spiritual thing you could do for a Christian, you say a verse, give them a good verse. Cup of tea. Cup of tea. A meal. Just a wee tray of something that shows that you have an interest in them. That can possibly be, not always now, Christians need the verses, and Christians need the little word. But always remember, people can be so far down that the most spiritual thing that you can do in certain circumstances is something as ordinary as giving them a bed or giving them a little piece of food. And even in the spiritual sense, it's great to give somebody a word that lets them get a wee bit of rest. You know, I know many a believer, and they're down, and the things that people say to them, instead of being a bed, to give them some rest is only giving them more turmoil. Just a wee bit of rest. Give them a little bit of food to strengthen them. Give them, you know, there are many a believer in the bitterness of life, and a wee taste of honey would just be most acceptable. Something to soothe. Something to mellow. Something to mollify. Something to sweeten. I tell you, it was great that this great man, Barzillai, he stepped unexpectedly out of the shadows and out of abundant resources in an unstinted way. He wasn't a king. He wasn't a king. But you know, he was giving to a king. And because he was giving to a king, he gave like royalty. And he says, the man that I'm giving this to and the men that are with him, he says, if these men belong to that king, he said, I'll do for them what I would do for him. And he said, if these men are his, I will show to them the love that I show to him, and I will treat them as I would treat him. Not a bad old grid. Treat Christians the way you would treat Christ. Let us do for them what we would do for him. And Barzillai said, I know David might be rejected by the most, but he said, I can see exactly who he is. He's God's anointed king. And out of his resources, this rich man, he gave ever so liberally. I just want to mention that again and leave it. You know, it's great, dear people. It's great to be able to see need. You know, there are people, I'm not talking about it now, I don't want to get anything sentimental or anything like that, but it'll come out later on. I mean, later on, not in the meeting, but later on in another world. There are people who have come into my life, and they have done things that they thought were nothing special. And maybe I didn't even tell them at the time, but they were the very things that were needed at that particular crisis. And how much the simple thing they did meant to me, I say, has remained unspoken until now, but will perhaps be seen in a future day. Dear Christians, let us keep our eyes open to be a Barzillai when people who belong to Christ are in times of deep difficulty. An 80-year-old man, I say, stepping out and taking the wealth of his farm. He must have emptied the barns and stripped the fields and gathered up all the utensils, taking the best he had to put it at the disposal of David's men in the day when they needed it most. Little people that play a large part. Well, if ever there was anybody did it, it was this man. Why did they do it? Of course, the passage tells us, it says, for they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. They assessed the situation. Hungry, weary, and thirsty. And mind you, there are many believers and those words just fit them. They're hungry and they're weary and they're thirsty in the wilderness of this world. And dear Christians, believe me, they're just crying out for a tender touch from some caring heart and from some liberal hand. And if God gives you the means, let that hand be yours, and let that heart be yours as well. Of course, in doing all that, I mentioned just very quickly the risk of Peter. Because one of the things that makes Barzillai's generosity so remarkable is this. At this particular time, the battle hadn't been fought. And the outcome was still unknown humanly. If Absalom wins, and he takes over the whole land on both sides of the Jordan, and he hears that I and these other two men were the men that gave supplies to David's army, well, he says, I'll be skinned. So that his gratitude and his generosity was not just something that was done easily. He knew that in doing this, I'm taking a risk. Because by my generosity, I'm putting my life on the line. I'm showing where my loyalty lies. I'm showing whom I recognize as King and Lord. And he said, if this fails, and if David's killed, well, he says, I'm prepared to die with him. For he says, there's not the likes of him. But of course, we know that that didn't turn out to be the case. And the battle is fought. Those couple of intervening chapters that we didn't read from are the chapters that tell us about the battle. And I'm not going into that just tonight. But it's over. David, of course, has won. Absalom hanging by the head in the tree. The time comes. David's coming back across the Jordan to Jerusalem. And as he's just down to catch the ferry across, who turns up to say farewell? Old 80-year-old Barzillai. The other two boys didn't come. I don't know why. They, I presume, were younger men. But it was three men that supplied the stuff. But it was only one man that came to the Jordan when David was coming back. David said to him, he says, Barzillai, I'm glad to see you. He says, come on ahead. He says, well, come over with me to Jerusalem. And he says, you'll be well fixed in Jerusalem. He says, you helped me when I was in a tight corner. He says, I'll see that you're fixed when I get back to the throne. And when I'm in a palace, he says, you can be sure you'll be in very little less. What an offer. What an offer. What a reward. What a compensation for this man's sacrifice. I like what the old man says. He's very simple and straightforward and very plain about it. He says to David, I'll not do it. No, he says, sure. He says, look at me. He says, I'm an old fella, Vera. He says, I haven't that much longer to live. And he says, I have certain boundaries now in life, limitations. He says, I can't cope with different food and I don't have a taste for things. And away up in Jerusalem, he said, you have all those things like Pizza Land and McDonald's and all that. And he says, I've just been used with spuds and butter. And he says, I couldn't fit into all that. And he says, maybe you can't fit the music and men and women singing. And he says, all those CDs and all that you're onto now up there. No, David. He says, I have boundaries in life. And he says, I have too many birthdays. And he says, I tell you the truth. He says, an old boy like me would only be a burden to you. He says, when I would come to the funeral, he says, I'd like to be buried where I lived. And he says, where I grew corn, and where I served the Lord, and held the ground, held it for the day when you would come. He says, that's where I'll be content to be buried. And he says, if you took me up to Jerusalem, look at the expense it would cost to get the hearse away back to the Jordan and all. He says, tell you no, dear. It's very kind of you, daughter. He says, you and I, you know how much I think of you. But he says, I'd finish my days living for you in Gilead rather than living with you in the glory of Jerusalem. I tell you, I think he's a great old man. I appreciate men like that. Men that are not looking for anything big in this world. You know, we have younger people here tonight. Can I say to you, you're getting on, we're in a very sophisticated old world. And everybody now has to be swanky. And we have to have the latest gadgetries. And we have to have the top model of the car. And we have to have the latest hi-fi. And all those things. I go whatever you like. I'm not fussed about them at all. And I have some of them, and you have some of them, and all those kind of things. And people are getting the idea. I mean, young Christians, the world has it already. But young Christians are getting the idea. This is it, you know. This is what you need to have to be a cool and a classy Christian. This is what you have to show the people that you've really made it. That your Christianity has been a good thing for you. I'm nearly competing with the world and outclass them. You see, well, that's all right. But all I'll say is this. I can notice that there was an older generation of believers. And they so enjoyed the Lord. Now listen to that. They so enjoyed the Lord that those exciting things that the worldlings rave about didn't even switch them on. Didn't even. You couldn't have gotten excited with them if you had tried. They just weren't even, fancy holidays and big houses and luxurious living. None at all. Give them their Bible. And give them a prayer meeting and a Bible reading a week. And a few gospel meetings and remembering the Lord and righteous living in their own farm or in their own place or in their own shop and a quieter way of life. And right across the whole business, godliness with contentment is great gain. And I tell you people, I can tell you this, and I'm not criticizing anybody. I hope some of you younger people go far, but don't forget what life is really about. And don't lose in the bewildering blizzard of choices in this materialistic world, in God's name, don't lose out in remembering that what will give to anybody's life dignity and quality and worth and weight is fellowship with God and the enjoyment of His Word and His Son and His presence in your soul. And the more you enjoy those things, the less you will be impressed by the gadgetry and the gimmickry of this old passing empty world. God help us. The more you look at it, the more you'll be compelled to weep at its emptiness. Thank God for all that we have in Christ. Barzillai was absolutely content. And he was realistic. He appreciated his limitations. That's another great sign of wise old age, to appreciate his limitations. He didn't want to be a burden. He didn't want to be awkward. He would just keep his place. And yet, I think to the end of his days, I don't know how much longer he lived, that David knew there's a man on the other side of Jordan, and he's a faithful ally of mine. David kissed him goodbye. He crossed the Jordan just to make sure that nobody would think he wouldn't cross the river. He got his foot onto the soil at this side. He says, David, I want them all to know that I identify with you wholeheartedly in going back to the throne. And he says, I have come to this side of the river. And David kissed him farewell, like they knew they would never meet again. And I don't think it's the last embrace that these two men will give, because when they meet in glory, and they've already met, and when we see them in a future day, David will take you over and introduce you to an 80-year-old man, whatever age he'd be then, not a wrinkle on his brow. He'd say, here, what I should tell you about this man. This is the man that brought me basins and bread and beans and beds. He says, when I had nothing. He says, he did it for me. And I've never forgotten him. I'll tell you, I hope there'll be somebody meet you like that in heaven. And David will introduce me and say, David, come here. I want to tell you something about this lady that you never knew. And here's a man did something for me Listen, people, that's what Christianity is about. Not the preaching and the sham and the show. This is the real opportunities that come in life. And the question is not do they come, for they will come. The question is, are we ready to rise to them when they do appear? Then there's another feature of this old man that I'll mention, and then I'll be soon getting towards the end. He said, David, I can't go. He says, no, I'll not go. But he says, I tell you what, I want to make a recommendation to you. He says, my son's here, Kim Ham. He says, like, if you feel like taking him, he says, it would be a great experience for him. And he says, you do for him whatever you think. And whatever seems good to you, he says, you do it for him. David says, well, he says, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, I'll take your son, Kim Ham. And he says, I'll do for him what seems good to you. He says, I'll look after him. Don't you worry. And David, our old Brazilian, he thought that the best thing, but you say, but you, boy, sure, if anything happens to me here and I'm nearly done, I've a foot in the grave, you'll get the whole farm. I'm going away to Jerusalem. I think old Brazilian, I felt that my day's done. The service that I was born to render, I've rendered it. I've grasped the opportunity in life. I've crested the wave. But he says, I want my boy to get the best opportunities possible. And he says, the best thing that I could wish for him is not a farm. The best thing that I could wish for him is a life lived close to David. Can I speak to the farmers in the meeting? And I know I'm in brave farming soil here. What do you want for your boys? Are you fighting over the last inch of acre? Or are you planning for your boys a life of closeness to Christ? We need to think about material things. I know that. But I say it's one great feature of a spiritual old man, that even though he mightn't be able to go any further himself, he does his very best to encourage the next generation. And Barzillai showed his generosity in allowing his son to go with David, even though it meant him as an 80-year-old going back home just on his own. And Kim Ham crossed the river and went on along with David. A very, very precious recommendation that he gave to him. And I would say to younger people in the meeting, that's what you set your eye upon as a goal in life, to live in fellowship with Christ, to be at his center, to be wherever he wants you to be, and be content to let the world go by, and to know no gain or loss. Our sinful selves are only shame, our glory all the cross. Keep close to the man that will sit upon the throne, and that will become a dictating and a directing factor of a useful life. In fact, that's why I read the verse in Jeremiah. Because 400 years later, this man, Kim Ham, has an inn in Bethlehem. 400 years later, it would seem that David saw to it that this boy, Kim Ham, got an inheritance not far from Jerusalem, for Bethlehem's only half a dozen miles from Jerusalem. And he was able to build an inn, and hundreds of years later, his descendants were still there at that inn, and they called the lodging place, the Inn of Kim Ham at Bethlehem. And I wouldn't want to go any further than that, but I could hardly help it. It's just a temptation of spectacular imagination. You know, there was a greater than David arrived one day, not too far from Bethlehem. And there was an inn involved. In fact, there was no room for them in the inn. That word inn in Luke chapter 2, there was no room for them in the guest chamber. The main room of the house was taken up. The word inn in Luke 2 is the same as the word guest chamber in chapter 22. There was no room in the guest chamber. There might have been room in the inn, but not the guest chamber. It was already occupied. And I would maybe imagine that somewhere on the outskirts of that inn, in some of its outbuildings perhaps, was the very place where great David's greater son arrived into this world. And if that is true, isn't it powerful to think that when this old man sent his son Kimham to be with David, he was actually starting a line that 1,000 years later would introduce Christ to this world. I'll tell you, people, if a man lives right, a spiritual old man, he can order things in such a way and even direct the next generation that after he himself is gone, the good of the legacy remains for many years to come. A little man, he was a great man financially and a great man with his farm, but he's little in the sense that not too much is said about him in Scripture. A little man, and he certainly played a very large part. Just as I stop, when David's dying, he calls in his son Solomon and he gives him some final instructions. There are one or two dicey boys that need to be watched. Yeah, most men are dying. They have one or two boys that were just, well, they were just a bit sneaky and snaky. And David tells Solomon about those. But then he says, Solomon, he says, there's a thing I want you to do. He says, do you see when you get to the throne and your kingdom has been established? He says, don't forget to look after the children of Barzillai.